This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
Didn't he?
It was the early hours.
Fade to black, or he sort of faded to white, didn't he?
Good morning. You're listening to Saturday Magazine with Nick and Leanne on Joy 94.9. Now, every now and again, we have a special guest in to talk with us about their life journey. And this morning, we've got the lovely Tex McKenzie, who's usually on the other end of our line, sending us warm messages of support for SatMag. So it's lovely to have you joining us this morning in the flesh, Tex.
It's really good to be here. And yes, I do enjoy an SMS.
I know you do.
I like to send an SMS.
The reason
I like to send an SMS is because I know people like getting them because it shows that there's people listening.
That's right.
And as you'd know, I do a show, co-host a show with work colleagues on Thursday night, from 8 till 9 p.m, health and HIV information.
That's right. And it's been going for quite a while now, hasn't it?
It has. Very, very long show. Yep. It's had a few different name changes, but it's been well for about the last 6 or 7 years.
Yep. And the message is always important.
Yep.
Has the message changed over that time, Tex? And just give it a background on what this message is, really. Why the program and what's been
It's
doing?
About information about HIV/AIDS and health issues for... Our funding from the government, this is, of course, the Victorian AIDS Council, where I work, is targeting at gay men, but we make it information for the community who are listening, who, of course, are a broad audience, who include heterosexual people as well. But we're talking about HIV, and the message about HIV, it's funny, this year in July will be the 21st anniversary of the first day I walked into the AIDS Council. Mm. And on the 9th of April, I'm just finishing a month's leave, so this happened while I was on leave, but it was my 16th anniversary as a staff member, a permanent staff member at the Victorian AIDS Council. So I've been there for a while.
Been there from, almost the beginning.
But it's funny... the question you asked about the message, the basic message about HIV remains and always will remain while HIV is around, is condoms and water-based lube. And if you like, the organisation, which has just turned 25, has been pushing that line. Mm. And we have to look at innovative and new ways to say condoms and water-based lube without turning an audience off. And, of course, advertisers and marketers and what we work with, different forms of education, health promotion, is reinventing that message and making it relevant and interesting to a broad... To different target groups. So we might, at one time, we might be talking to younger guys who might be under 30 or in maybe under 20. And at the same time, we're also talking to people who have adventurous sex, sex outside the norm, if you like, as well as people who will be having standard sex, penis entering anus, penis entering mouth type. You know, ordinary. So it's dealing with the age-old questions of what's safe and what's not, and being as honest as we can with people and saying that the ultimate protection is a condom and water-based lube, and there are alternatives, and addressing those alternatives and addressing them to a broad audience of people who might be coming out at, 16, 18, early 20s, also to the people who... I'm not going to age you all, but who are my age, in the early 50s, who might be coming out in the early 50s, who may have been in a long-term committed relationship with a woman, might be marriage, and they're coming out and they've got similar needs to the people who are coming out at 16 or 18 because they're entering a brand new community. We all have cross-linked communities, of course, communities of work and social and where we live, and who we have sex with. So it's addressing those sort of broad issues with specific targeted campaigns which speak to everyone, but also especially speak to targeted audiences.
And defining who those target audiences are. So how did you get to into the VAC 21 years ago? What prompted that job application?
Well, I started, as many people do, like in this organisation, as a volunteer. And that was as a result of, a life-changing event, which happened in 1988, which was called the Queen Street shooting. It was in the an Australia Post building, and it was a building I worked in at the time.
Really?
And I did some counselling, intensive counselling, supplied by Australia Post. And the guy I was doing the counselling with was really quite gorgeous, straight, but really quite gorgeous. And when it was evident to him and evident to me that I was only going to see him because he was quite gorgeous and really comforting and reassuring to talk to, I didn't really need to see him anymore. He said, look, it's time for you to do something for yourself. You can't always keep on seeing me. You're a gay man. HIV is very... in the news at the time, of course, which, of course, it was the... it might
1998.
It might be when HIV had finally got a name of HIV. Before that had been AIDS. A death sentence, it was seen. So, it's... that's, you know, that's when I joined.
Interesting that... I mean, I don't want to get sort of deep and psychological. Interesting that you had an experience around a trauma of the bomb going off, because I was working around the corner in Lonsdale Street as well.
It wasn't a bomb. It was a shooting. It was a gunman who broke into the building. And at the time he broke into the building and started shooting people, he actually shot people on the floors that, not the floors I worked on, but the floors I worked on, I went to, up in the philatelic, the stamp collecting area. And I was actually out with a delivery truck delivering visual display merchandise to post offices, stamp collecting post offices. And I tried to get back into the building and the city was blocked off. And the only way I could make contact with the building was through a direct landline from the GPO through to the office I worked in. And it was after all of that. I was still working for Australia Post, but I became a volunteer through meeting someone who knew someone who got me, you know, in the door.
No, I think the parallel, sorry, I was getting confused with Russell Street, but the parallel is something quite traumatic, and then going to an area that's was to do with sort of life-threatening disease at that time. And I just wonder if there was sort of that need to do something around saving people.
No, there was a need to do something.
Whatever.
And, you know, as I said, I've worked for the AIDS Council for quite a while now. I train volunteers and I interview new volunteers. And I imagine it's much the same as new volunteers joining JOY or any organisation in our community. Why do you want to get involved in this work? Because I want to either make a difference or say thank you to the people who helped me.
But in 1988, what did you think could be done? It looked pretty hopeless then, didn't it?
When I joined the organisation, the talk was that in 10 years there would be a cure for HIV. Now, when people join the organisation, we say there may be a cure in 10 years' time, because that's what the scientists constantly say. It's always 10 years into the future. But there are treatments which keep people alive. So HIV or AIDS is no longer a death sentence. HIV is a manageable chronic illness, much the same as I have diabetes. And I should say right now, I'm speaking with a lisp because I've been to the dentist and I have four teeth missing at the front. Gay man with a lisp, I know I'm fitting a stereotype.
I never even noticed.
That's right.
But yeah, I know, I'm aware of the lisp.
It actually doesn't show.
Right.
There you are, so don't worry about it. But I think there's been a huge change, and we think 21 years now of
it's actually 25 years.
I'm just thinking of the council and your work, I mean, there are people who've born and grown up in that time. And I remember we were having a discussion somewhere about a related issue, and probably young Adam, who said, and when he came out as a young man in that period, he thought he was afraid to have sex because he thought it would kill him. And I thought, what? And there's a real divide, isn't there, between those of us who came out and were alive before then and this black swan event, really. Who would have thought that something like this would ever occur, how unprepared we were. And yet, so I was just thinking, in the time that you were there, what sort of what did you need, or what did you do to fortify yourself, or to gird you, you know, get the strength to do this?
Good friends, good friends who either worked in the organisation as staff or volunteers, and people outside of the organisation in my social networks. And at the time, one of my big social networks was going to the Laird Hotel, mm-hmm. which was, at that time, was a mixed venue when I first started going. So Carol from SatMag would remember those times. Yes. I know, in fact, she and Chris, her partner, met at the Laird. Right. Yes.
It's not going to happen now.
It wasn't the leather night, though, I don't think.
No.
Was it a boot scoot night? Sorry.
Probably
yeah,
was.
Okay. And, boot scooting was happening at those times, yeah. Not that I've ever boot scooted.
It's all right. You don't have to confess to everything.
Hang on, with a name like Tex.
Yes.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
It's funny, actually. Yesterday, I went to the Birth, Deaths and Marriages and officially added the name Tex to my birth certificate.
Oh, well, congratulations.
Which I've been meaning to do since I was 30. And when the guy said to me, so how long have you been Tex? And I looked back in my head and I said, about 40 years. So for most of my life, I've been Tex to most people. Mm. And David, which is my name at birth, to members of the family, generally.
Okay. So your family don't call you Tex?
Oh, some of the a lot of the nieces and nephews actually call me Tex because they think it's terribly groovy.
Well, it is. It is. Yeah. So you want to tell us now while we're talking about how it came about? Because you're obviously quite young.
Yep. Yes, I was in year seven.
Mm-hmm.
I went to year seven. I went to Swinburne Technical School, which was a compromise. I wanted to go to a high school. My father wanted me to go to a technical school called Jordanville Technical School.
Jordan, oh my God.
Which was renowned for the Geordie boys.
Who were a bit
local thugs. Yeah, not terribly me. Not terribly me at all. And I went to Swinburne because he'd been to Swinburne as a... he went to the college, I went to technical school, so I didn't know many people. Most people had nicknames. There was an American wrestler, one of those world championship wrestling called Tex McKenzie.
That's right.
So if you Google Tex McKenzie, you get a mix of him and me.
A bit scary.
We already learned about it. Somebody said, is he the guy that used to wrestle little people?
That's right. Mark Heidelberg sent us a message.
Well, that was him. He, because of his name and because of my surname McKenzie, and it was one of those things you think it might last a year. Mm-hmm. Well, 40 years later.
Yeah, so how did that happen?
Mm.
So when did you feel comfortable, or there was never an issue about introducing yourself, saying, oh, my name's Tex?
It's never been an issue, really. It's never been an issue. On bank accounts and stuff, I'm still David, but I'm about, now that I've got getting this new birth certificate, I'm going to change everything over.
It's kind of like happy birthday text, isn't it?
Yeah. Indeed.
It's sort of like, I don't know, happy coming out or something.
Celebration.
Oh, another coming out. Yeah.
Yes. How many can we have in our lives? Well, in fact, how many coming outs do we have in our lives? Because we come out as Texas, we come out as gay, lesbian people, we come out as people with medical conditions.
Yeah,
all sorts of things.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, you very quietly said you had diabetes and we just didn't think on that, but... Presumably.
And that's why I lost the teeth, because one of the things that happens with diabetes is it affects the gums and makes gum control really difficult, and consequently teeth come out. But you can also lose limbs and all sorts of things.
That's right, so, if you don't look after yourself.
So Tex survived Swinney.
Mm-hmm. But very interestingly, I went to Swinburne Technical School in Form 1 and 2, which is a trade school. Mm. You go there to learn a trade,
Did you learn?
What was your path going to be?
It was going to be woodwork, I think, because I certainly didn't enjoy sheet metal work. But then in year 7, 8, 9, as it's called now, Form 3, year 9, I went to an offshoot of Swinburne, which had just opened, which was a community school.
Oh, the community school?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Swinburne
it must have just started then, had it?
I was a foundation year student.
Wow.
It's since closed. It was experimental. It was a relaxed rules school, they called it. It was government funded. Mm-hmm. So the first government funded relaxed rules, basically where you choose your curriculum, you choose what you're going to do, it's first name basis with teachers. It was all terribly radical at the time. Mind you, I used to swan around in a caftan with long hair holding a stick of incense. So,
can we just give some of our younger listeners a year for this?
It was early 70s. Mm.
Okay.
Yeah, sounds very much like the early 70s.
Vietnam War, sort of.
Yes, and you were sort of year 14, early 70s. We must be the same age. And I get it, yes. And it was it was like a real Summerhill model, wasn't it?
Sort of, yes, indeed.
I had a couple of nephews who went there. didn't do them any good at all.
Well, it's interesting because the number of people, it was a school, I think a school for misfits. People who didn't fit into some of the private free schools and high schools. So there are people who've gone on to become lawyers and doctors and all those sorts of things and artists. But it was funny, the tough kids, the skinheads.
Yep. The Geordie boys.
About three quarters of the ones who went to the school turned out to be gay.
Oh, really?
They used to be very homophobic at the time because I knew I was gay and had essentially come out. But they were a little homophobic. But since then, they've come out in droves.
And is there sort of a network or a contact with that lot still? Or just the school itself?
I've got contact with the five or six people that I was associated with, and one of them, of course, has gone on to become the mother of my son.
Well,
that's another story too.
Because I have a six-year-old son.
All right. Well,
that's what wearing caftans will do for you.
Time to draw breath here.
That's right. You're listening to Joy 94.9 Saturday Magazine, and our special guest this morning is Tex McKenzie. Welcome back to Saturday Magazine with Nick and Leanne. Our special guest this morning is Tex McKenzie, the official Tex McKenzie. It's on his birth certificate.
Yep.
We had a couple of messages in Tex. Someone says, loving the show. Tex is such a dear soul and an icon. So there you go. That's what you get for 21 years at the VAC. Also had another interesting question. It said, out of interest, Tex, are you HIV positive? It wasn't made clear when we were chatting about you starting work at the VAC.
Yeah, no,
but
I'm
how
not.
Do you feel about a question like that anyway?
Well, I'm not HIV positive, but I'm used to the question. It's a question I've been asked often. Usually when I tell people that I work at the AIDS Council, they say, so what's it like to have AIDS?
Mm.
Although more lately, of course, over the last 8 years or so, people have said, what's it like to have HIV? Because people are learning. So, yeah, it's just one of those questions that everyone who works there get. It's not relevant. It's like someone who works at the Cancer Council. Do you have cancer? You know, it's just as relevant, which means it's not. But for the people who work in peer support groups, they are usually openly HIV positive. Mm-hmm. There are a number of people in the organisation, both staff and volunteers, who are openly HIV positive, and most of the ones who haven't said whether they're positive or negative, I wouldn't know, and it doesn't really matter.
Yeah,
it's one of those things that doesn't really matter.
Depends on the role too in the organisation, doesn't it? As you said, peer support.
For people living with HIV, it naturally requires the person who's working with them to be HIV positive to understand the
empathy
issues.
Only goes so far. That's right. So there's the answer to that question.
Well, there you are. So is it a question that you think people should be asking anyway?
It's not really relevant because in Victoria, the law states in Victoria that if someone is having sex with another person, the responsibility is for a HIV positive person to use condoms and water-based lube. And if they don't use, if the other person says, no, I don't want to use condoms, it's the responsibility of the positive person to say, well, I'm HIV positive, so I think we should. Whereas in New South Wales, a person who's HIV positive, who's having casual sex, is required by law to say, I am HIV positive. Now, anyone who's been to New South Wales will know that they don't have these people rushing up to them saying, hi, I'm positive.
Would you like to have sex with you? Yeah.
And the problem is that studies have shown, or research has shown, that most same-sex attracted men expect a person who's HIV positive to say to them before they have sex, I'm HIV positive. When people are asked in surveys, people who say that in surveys are then further, the question goes on a bit more and says, well, then would you have sex with the person? They say, no, I'd look for someone who says that they're HIV negative. Mm. And you can usually then go on and say, so you're looking for someone who either doesn't know or someone who lies because they're desperate for attachment, intimacy with someone. And, you know, they are so used to people saying, well, bugger off. I'll find someone else who isn't.
Yes, I'm not sure about that phrase there. The implication being that people don't want to practice safe sex if they can help it, sort of.
Some people,
a bit of worry there, you know.
Some people.
I'd rather be with somebody who's negative It's funny. I don't want to have to do all that stuff.
The conversation that you had about Adam, who you were talking with about sex, there are generations of young men now, of course, who have never known anything but sex with condoms and water-based lube. Mm. There are people of our age, I dare say, you said we seem to be about the same age, who have been in the times before condoms were necessary and have learned to accommodate to use condoms. Mm. And there are all sorts of couplings up of people who are openly HIV positive, who, or in their communities, will talk to about, you know, do you want to have sex? Yes, I want to have sex. Oh, look, I'm HIV positive. Oh, great, so am I. Mm-hmm. We can have, then now there are some people who will choose to then say, oh, great, we can have unprotected sex. We can have sex without condoms. Now, the danger there is other sexually transmitted mm-hmm. infections are really easily picked up by people living with HIV or who have compromised, people who have compromised immune systems. People who have the flu are more likely to pick up a sexually transmitted infection because their immune system is compromised. So, and if I go out and say to someone in a bar or a club or a hotel or a car park or a shopping centre or wherever that I pick them up, although I have a partner, I wouldn't be picking them. But should I be single? Mm-hmm. And saying to them, you know, I'm HIV negative. I know I'm HIV negative because I was at my last test. Yep. And, you know, I usually use condoms. So, you know, I'll be right. And the other person says, oh, look, you know, I was HIV positive at my last test as well. Great. We can have sex without condoms. Mm. Of course, when someone has a HIV test and gets the result, it tells them what their status was 3 months ago because it takes HIV up to 3 months to replicate in the body enough so that it will be recognised in a test. But someone who is newly HIV positive and doesn't know it is very infectious, if you like, and making the spread of HIV quite possible if condoms aren't used. So the message that we have constantly put out, and I've constantly put out to my friends and acquaintances and buddies, is why bother? It's just a piece of latex.
It is.
It's going to offer protection. Whether you're positive, a protection from getting another sexually transmitted infection.
And it's not that they're invented because of HIV/AIDS.
They've been around for several
other reasons, including, you know, prevention of sexually transmitted diseases.
Yep.
So, fortunately, they did exist. Now, let's talk about sexually... This is the worst segue. I'll probably go on record as doing it, but I'm going to do it anyway.
Do it.
Talking about sexually transmitted things, you've got a son.
Isn't that great?
But obviously he wasn't wearing a condom.
We don't know, do we?
Well, I made a donation to a plastic jar.
Okay.
So, yes, in a medical facility. Mm. So, yeah.
Do they have magazines? I've always wondered about
they
that.
Do, and they, but they have straight, magazine. Straight magazines. So you need to BYO.
BYO everything.
Indeed.
So how did that come about? Excuse the expression, about the discussion around parenting?
One of the people I went to school with, my friend Victoria, who lived in New Zealand, she was sitting opposite me on my couch, furiously hand-rolling cigarettes, just ordinary cigarettes, and drinking copious amounts of red wine, and over the course of a conversation said to me, and this was probably about early thousands, 2002 or something, and said to me, the time's ticking on, I'm in my early 40s, if I want to have a child, I've been wanting to have a child and da-da-da-da, I could have a one-night stand but I wouldn't know anything about the person. Mm-hmm. There were only ever two men. I asked if they wanted to be the father. They were both gay and they both said no. And Mr. Naivety said, oh, who were they? Mm-hmm. And she said, oh, a friend who lived in Queensland and you, meaning me. Oh. I said, oh, right. And 2 weeks later when she was back in New Zealand, I rang her up and I said, when did I say no? She said, oh, about 5 years ago. And I said, oh, it's funny, I've been thinking over the years, you know, family, all my siblings have children, so finding, having a family of my own. And so, long story short, we decided to go ahead with it. And she went through a clinic in Wellington. They had no problems. I went over there, met with them. They had no problems. I was gay. Mm-hmm. We had an agreement to bring up the child, that she would be the primary caregiver. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I would have access and get to, she wanted someone that she could say, that's your dad.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And he usually calls me Tex, but sometimes he says Dad, especially when he wants something. Mm-hmm. He turns six this month in May.
Oh, wonderful.
So in 23 days' time.
So he's in New Zealand?
At the moment, they're in Germany.
Oh, all right.
Because she wanted to go to Germany to do something to do with her studies, sort of perpetual student. Mm-hmm. One of those BAs or one of those degree type things. I didn't get one, I don't know. And she's in with Deutsche Welle in Germany, in Cologne.
The radio station.
And working on doing something in conjunction with community radio. So
we've got damn all time left, really.
Time flies.
Well, it does. I mean, we're on journeys here with Tex McKenzie, and we sort of got to 1975. Not that we're mapping out things, but what did you do before you became Mr. Icon at
VAC?
I was an ordinary same-sex attracted man who had limited contact with the community,
mm-hmm.
Because I didn't know it was out there, but I didn't take the time to find out it was out there.
It sounds like you were aware that you're gay from a young age.
Oh, yeah, from about grade three.
Yep.
When I used to get picked on. Oh.
Were you little? Because you're tall.
Yeah, no. At 16, I went whoosh in height.
Okay.
Before that, yes, I was average height. I won't say short, I'll say average.
Yep.
I've known since then, and I probably came out and had sex, so I think, when I was at the community school, a school bus driver, the back of the bus.
The bus driver?
Yes, school bus driver.
That was probably not strictly legal, was it?
No, I don't think it was.
Don't go too far into that.
Don't go too far
Was it
there.
Fun?
It was.
Yes. You didn't feel compromised or anything?
No.
No, good.
No.
Good.
Now I'm almost 53 with a partner.
53 with a... Fantastic. So how long are you going to keep doing this? Working as a counsellor? You've got quite a lot of roles there.
No, I'm not a counsellor. Counsellor. I'm a health educator.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
And my primary role is working with volunteers who work in outreach, which is going out into sex on premises venues or online, and talking to other same-sex attracted men about health-related issues. And some of those thorny old questions about, you know, why after 25 years are we still using condoms?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, is oral sex safe? And there's all sorts of standard questions that come out, and it's because these newly coming out guys who are 18 and the newly coming out guys who are...
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.